Welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Good evening, good morning, good night, good second breakfast, whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I'd like to welcome you to Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, the very first bilingual show for CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts. And today we are celebrating, yes, mommies, we are celebrating Mother's Day. Yes. And this is not the same old show. I know you've been listening to the same show for Mother's Day for, I know, like maybe 20 years. Well, maybe like three. But anyway, we have a new version today. And I have one of my dearest friends from Circle, Reverend Florence Edwards Miller. And she was with us when we do the very first Mother's Day special. And today she's back with us, and we're going to talk a little bit about motherhood in the times of 2020 and beyond. But not only that, not only Florence is here, but she has brought with herself a friend. And we are going to be talking also with Bea. Bea is also a mom. She's a mother of three, a writer, and a teacher. And we are here to talk all things kids, because I know the only thing I know about kids is to stay awake. So, Florence, welcome to Lunatic Mondays. How are you?
I am doing great. And I know you try and stay away, but man, event after event, I just drag you back in doing things with the kids in Circle. It's wonderful. Thank you for putting up with me for all these years, Laura.
You know, I think if one cannot come out of their comfort zone once in a while, then where's the fun? And when we have done things with the children's activities that you coordinate so lovingly, and a titanic task to coordinate, I've come out alive. The kids didn't eat me. The kids didn't kick me. It's okay. I haven't swore in front of the kids. So it's all good. So far, knock on wood.
Well, thank you. And thanks for bringing me back on the show. That was a wonderful show that we did very early in my motherhood journey. The baby that we talked about then is now running around, and we're eagerly waiting to figure out which kindergarten she's gotten into in our district. So it's been a while.
Wow. How old is she now?
She is, as of this show, she has just turned 5. So
wow.
She is a big girl.
Wow. Well, I am delighted to have you here, of course, Florence, as always, and B coming in and buzzing.
And hi, thanks so much for having me.
Of course. And you have three.
I do. As of the airing, I will have a 4-year-old and twin 1 and almost a 1/2-year-olds.
Wow. And you can hear to the audience that we were talking about when this will air, because we are sometime in the past. You don't need to know. Don't get distracted about that. We are sometime in the past because obviously these wonderful moms have kids, and, you know, we have to work some magic so this could happen. And we are pre-recording, but yeah, it's still the 21st century, so don't worry about it. It's not that far behind that we're recording. And speaking of 21st century, what a century it's been. I mean, I have never, ever, ever, and I say this humbly, never in my life have I been more sure that I made the right decision not to be a mom than on 2020. People who birth children, people who's raising children, anybody who assumes the titanic labor of being a mom or a parent, I have nothing but respect for you. How have you survived? I mean, we see you, but that's not enough. Florence, what has been the greatest challenges, if you can list, I don't know, about a million of them?
Oh, you know, it's really been all over the place. So over a year ago, when this first happened, we made the decision to pull our child out of daycare, which she was in full time, because both my husband and I were able to work, were fortunate enough to be able to work at home, but we were still working. But we were concerned about the grandparents. We had grandparents in town. We wanted to be able to take care of them. And the risk seemed too high to leave our child in daycare. So for 11 months, Genevieve was out of daycare, and we were taking care of her at home. And we were very lucky to have the support of grandparents on both sides of the family who were able to sort of provide some daycare for us. And that, you know, we had ups and downs and bumps with that. But I think one of the blessings of that time was that my daughter got to have a much closer relationship with her grandparent, with all of her grandparents, than I had with my grandparents, or my husband had with his. And so that's really was a wonderful thing to come out of this. And, you know, it was awful, but I like to look for the silver linings. The wheels kind of shook off that in January, where it was just obvious that that this was wearing on the grandparents too much. And my daughter was really suffering sort of behaviorally. And we needed to do something different. And it became clear that one set of parents actually needed to go somewhere different, go back to, they have a little condo up here, but their main residence is in Georgia. And it became clear that they were going to be able to be vaccinated faster, which for my mother's various medical reasons needed to happen ASAP. And so they went in January, our pod broke up, and one set of grandparents went back to Georgia, and we made the decision to send my daughter to part-time pre-K in person, which was really difficult on a number of levels, particularly because in my city, as in many, pre-K is only 12 hours a week. And I had a job which at that point had been reduced from full-time to 20 hours a week. So that was, that meant that, and of course, with the pod being broken up, even the other side of grandparents couldn't do any care for her. So for the past few months, I've been trying to juggle being a part-time worker and a part-time mom in the same part of time, mostly. And my husband's a teacher. He's teaching from home, but teaching is a labor-intensive job, and it's even more labor-intensive in the middle of a pandemic. So I got to admit, I was luckier than many, but these past months have been the most challenging. But light at the end of the tunnel. Both set of grandparents are vaccinated. Both set of grandparents are coming back into town. She's thriving in pre-K. It's very clear for her that was the right decision to make. And, you know, I am cautiously optimistic that things are just going to go better from here. But it was hard, and it was extraordinarily hard. And I was extraordinarily, extraordinarily lucky and privileged.
You have indeed. I am so happy that all sets of grandparents are vaccinated. And for folks that have received their vaccine, awesome. For folks who are waiting, keep the faith and keep your patience. And please, for the love of God, get your vaccine. I mean, yeah, we don't know what will happen. We don't know, blah, blah, blah. The alternative is always going to be better. We can put a stop to this and then deal with the consequences later. Please get your vaccine. That was my commercial for vaccines. Nobody's paying me. I am not getting a vaccine right away. But B, how it has been for you, because you have three and they're younger, and they were 6 months, the littlest ones. So how has been this being a mom after 2020 pandemic?
It has been a journey. Yeah, the story is this. We had moved into a very old house when I was about 5 months pregnant, through a difficult twin pregnancy, that wasn't expected to be twins. So that was a surprise. We'll call it a divine surprise.
Yay.
So they were born at the beginning of December, and then we were locked down at the end of March. So we had just kind of found something like a groove with the help we had enlisted, all the different types of help and community support that we had arranged for. We had like finally kind of found a way into it. And then just as my son turned 3, everybody shut down. We went into full quarantine because we've got tiny little twin babies, especially that, you know, we don't know what would happen. So we then had to figure out how to do it on our own. You know, and when one baby comes, everyone says, do you have help? When more babies come, everyone says, you have help, right? So an extra 2 babies on top of a toddler in the big transition in the winter was not welcome. My husband, we were lucky enough that he got an extended paternity leave. So he literally went back into the office in New York for one day before they shut down the offices. So he has been away from his children for one day over the past year and a half, which has been a blessing. Like, we want, you know, our families to be close and for the fathers especially to be present. We have a constantly shifting balance of responsibilities and routines as everyone is growing and figuring out what we need at different times. I will say it's gotten easier as everyone's gotten a bit older. It's been a struggle. I like to say that I would not recommend the twin experience for most parents. I love parenting. This is my job, my full-time job, and I love it every day. But I would not give twins on top of a toddler on top of a pandemic more than 2 stars.
The thing with twins is like, okay, how, I mean, man, it's just hard. I wholeheartedly say and respect, you know, like, I choose not to be a mom. I choose not to birth children since I was like maybe 10 or 12 years old. I don't know why, but it was just like, nope, not for me. And you know, it is annoying that society, if you were born with a vulva, it is expected that you will have to birth children. And things are changing a little bit, but not a great deal. But the thing is, okay, every person with a vulva is expected to be a mom, but nobody is expected to be present and to help you, right? Like normally. But then in this time of pandemic, even I would want to believe that even if people try to want to help, it was impossible because how you get people coming into your, I mean, I really am in awe how mothers have survived, you know, and the children, of course.
You know, and I think the hard part about it is that on a certain level, a lot haven't. The thing that my husband and I kept like looking at each other and going is like, thank God she's not a year older, because as bad as it was doing this with a 4-year-old, if she was a year or two older and was like, the people that my heart goes out to are the parents of early elementary schoolers, where the kid is expected to do this online schooling, but is not able to read, and you know, just is, and where there's really no way other than the parent being right on top of that the whole time. And you know, the statistics are brutal. I mean, this is for particularly people who are primary parents, which in our society generally means mothers. This has been economically and socially devastating. I know quite a few women who have dropped out of the workforce or pulled back entirely. And this is going to mean, like, we're going to be seeing the gender income gap from this for probably this next generation. And because we know that when women aren't in the workforce or aren't progressing, generally that gets attributed to them being women rather than the circumstances, this could set back women in, you know, all aspects of public life for multiple generations here, because, you know, the women of my who are working like me, you know, are going to have a harder time of it. And so there's going to be less people who are there to advocate and promote other women. It's awful. I mean, this is really bad. There's a couple, you know, high notes politically happening. There's some good movement there, and I'm cautiously optimistic. But at the same time, you know, they talked about the last recession being a man session, because it predominantly, or it seems to hit a lot of like heavy industries and manufacturing, which was dominated by men. And this is the fem session, women recession, not because it hit service sector, which is again dominated by women, but also the mom session, because this really has shown the massive, massive problems our society has in not addressing the needs of families and mothers.
Not to mention, we had 4 years with the most misogynistic, racist leader, supposed to be, but we're not going to mention that. I hear you. I mean, this is a true disaster. Do you think, I mean, in an ideal world, do you think it would have been best if schools would have been interrupted completely and just no schools until not learning, no classes until we can figure this out? Maybe postpone everybody, hold everybody for a year.
I as somebody who worked in education for a while, I think that in theory, you know, saying like, let's not put any more pressure on ourselves and give the kids a break because they haven't been trained to deal with any of these things. I think that would have been a good idea on a couple of levels, but what the pandemic's really done is, what the shutdown in general has done is shown like how many jobs schools really perform. You know, at home, it tends to be the mothers who are doing the work, but out in the world, it's the schools who are doing all of that mothering. You know, that's where kids are getting their health checkups. That's where they're getting three meals a day, a lot of them. It's where they're getting, you know, guidance counselors and adults who care about them, clean water, heat. Like, schools are really a safe haven in so many ways. You know, we tend to focus on a lot of the dangers, but they perform a lot more of a societal function, you know, so it's not just pause school because kids, you know, it's too much work to make parents their full-time teachers and that sort of thing. It's also, well, how are some of them going to eat, right? And I worked in a higher needs district for a while, and it really was a matter of like whether they'll eat at all day, or whether they will have heat all day, or, you know, see adults who care about them. And that's the case for most children, sadly enough. You know, one in three people in America who are in poverty are children. So it affects them just as much, if not more.
And the other reality is that in addition to providing all these programs, it's childcare. Our entire, you know, people there, you know, there's a lot of, you know, teachers aren't babysitters. They're much more than that. But our society and the way that we structure taking care of families, we basically only have one major effective program that addresses the fact that children exist. And that's K through 12 education, which is provided free by the state, which is a special kind. And even then, the way it's structured is a special kind of insane, where we basically, from birth to age five, so for five, assuming you only have one child, for 5 years, you are basically completely on your own in terms of providing for that child and having any childcare for them. And then from ages 5 to 18, then you're going to get most of the day childcare. It's not full day. I mean, most schools get out way before five. Our system is basically set up around the presumption of a homemaker and the presumption that there is a non-working parent who is generally the mother. And that hasn't been real for white parents for several generations now. It's unrealistic that most families can get by on a single income. And it was never a majority thing or a realistic prospect for people of color in this country. But yet our entire system for families presupposes that. Everything from, like, for example, the pre-K coverage that I get in my city, it's Tuesday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11. And that's like, which is basically, I mean, you know, a mommy's morning out program. You know, that's not childcare. And if you pay for childcare, you actually don't get any discount for those hours that are paid for by the state. It's crazy. But the thing that this pandemic has shown is that this put many families in just an impossible bind. And so you had things like, you know, my family has a tendency not to have children until you're in your mid to late 30s. So the grandparents in question are not spring chickens, but they were taking care of this highly energetic little girl for 11 months. And other families were forced into this other thing. And many, many families were forced into situations where they were having to do childcare situations that they knew to be unsafe from a pandemic perspective. You know, if we hadn't had that grandparent care, absolutely, we would have had to keep my child in daycare, no matter how unsafe conditions became, because we gotta work.
And, you know, with how culturally different we are, you know, like people of color, like brown and black folks, we have more like grandma lives around the corner, or there's an auntie, or, you know, la tía and stuff like that. But a lot of families in the United States are not as cohesive. I mean, regardless of your ethnicity or your culture, in this country, families tend to separate. I mean, it's actually frowned upon if you're not like, move away from your parents and then never come back. So there is that idea also of not many people have a grandparent to come and kind of like help as much as or as little as they could. And man, oh man, I just have, like, again, and I will say it until the day I no longer exist, I have nothing but respect for people who are parenting through this pandemic. And as you said, and I have to agree with learning, with the e-learning, because I know of people who have not one or two, but three and up children on various grades. And you know, from like first grade, having to learn how to log in on an iPad or something. And it's like, how do you, you know, it's nearly impossible. And then the parents are getting fed up. Unfortunately, it's true. It's usually the mom, because, you know, out of the two, if a father is present, chances are he makes more money because inequity. And then, of course, if somebody has to sacrifice their job to care for the children, it will have to be mom because inequity. And it's just like a merry-go-round that never stops. It's just ridiculous. But I think the silver lining, as you were saying earlier, is we go from where do we go from here? You know, there has to be some changes. I have an illusion, utopic thought that a lot of people who we learn that can work from home probably should, you know, we will help the planet, we will help families, we will consume less. I don't know. I mean, I'm very privileged to work from home and have no kids, but what is your ideal future be, you who have the youngest children?
Oh, an ideal. Well, we have been lucky that my husband has been able to work from home the whole time with very little interruption, other than, you know, involving his daughters in STEM careers really early by bringing them to a lot of meetings. You know, we've talked about it a lot in terms of our future plans, and we have no plans on him going back into the office regularly. There doesn't seem to be a point, and I think a lot of companies are realizing that. So I think there will be more of a shift towards that accessibility. And for us, that's a huge deal. We live in New Jersey. He works in Manhattan. And so, you know, it was up and out by 6:30 every day, home at 6:30 every night. And if he had a meeting run late or had to go to a work function, he didn't see his kids much, or his one child much that day. And, you know, it happens, but it sucks, you know? So for us, having him home has been, you know, just really great. And it's definitely kind of changed our expectations going forward and our plans. Ideally, I have very tiny people, but I kind of fell into the homeschool sphere, partly just to give some structure to our toddler. Not that, you know, at three they really need much in terms of education, but just to give some activities and some structure so that he got some one-on-one time with the parents. And we actually kind of really enjoyed it. It's not a perfect system by far, but we like the freedom that it's given us. And so we're not sure if, you know, he will be enrolling in public school later, because, you know, I'm lucky enough to be able to be a stay-at-home parent right now. In terms of the bigger picture, I think that for students, it'll help accessibility-wise, you know, students who might not medically be able to be in a classroom won't have to be homeschoolers if they don't want to be. They won't have to be in, you know, a separate room or, you know, closed off from the general population of students. I think that it'll also ideally increase some accessibility for adults in schools. It's a little different because they are the child care providers at any age, but I think that allowing that flexibility and realizing that there's a little more choice in how things work could be a blessing in disguise. I also really secretly have this like fantasy sometimes that across every spectrum of class and color and like any social standing whatsoever, every voter had a moment of, oh my God, how do teachers do this all the time? How do educators get through the day? Why do they do this? Why did they choose this? And people might choose to fund schools just a little bit more. That would be really lovely to see.
Your mouth to the goddess ears. Yeah.
Oh my God, you stole my words. Exactly. I was just going to say that, because that is the other greatest disparity that this pandemic has come to show us. Teachers, mostly women, and totally, absolutely, 100% abused by a system, buying from their pocket this and that and the other for the children. And on top of that, being yelled by the parents, oh my God. And then moms who were e-learning or e-teaching with their own little kids, I just like, I noticed this too much, it's too much.
My hope here is that, look, our system of how families interface with our society was already broken. You know, I did my little rant about, you know, 0 to 5, but, you know, like the school day is too short. The schools are horrifically underfunded. Teachers are undervalued and families are undervalued. Like the caregiving is undervalued and workplaces are not set up to do this. And this is true across the board, from if you're a shift worker who doesn't know what shifts she'll have from week to week, or especially if you're trying to put together a couple part-time jobs to try and make ends meet for your family, to, you know, like really high-end white collar, maybe you're making a lot of money, but you have absolutely no flexibility jobs. This system is broken. And my dear hope is that now that that's been brought to everyone's attention, we can actually have some effort to fix this. And, you know, this is where, you know, like, you know, you and I've talked about this, Laura, a little bit before, about how I really feel like there's a sort of a partnership between that needs to happen between people who are parents and people who are not parents, but by choice, where if not parents by choice need to be like backing up and resource for the parents so that, you know, the species can continue. And then it needs to be acknowledged that this is an incredible amount of work and that the people who take it on need to have accommodations made for them so that they can do it. But that needs to be a thing that, yeah, we're taking this on. We're needing this. So we're not going to have the default be that everyone, especially everyone with a vulva, like you said, becomes a parent, because that should not be the only option.
I was debating, as I've been listening to you both throughout the show, I was debating in, should I mention how happy child-free people has been? Oh my God, no, that is too cynic. This is the time to mention it, because everything you just said is the truth. When we met, and I say I don't like kids because I don't like to have kids, you know, but I don't dislike the little ones. I mean, they are amazing. And it's a very well-known secret that I love Circle, but I was hooked by the children because they're just magical little beings. And it is very comfortable. And I have to come clean. You know, the first couple months of the pandemic, I was like, ha ha, see what happened for having kids? All of us, you know, people who don't have kids, we tend to be a little bit cynic sometimes, you know. But then you go over and you have friends, and then it's 1 week and then another week and then another week, and then it turns into 3 weeks and then it's a month and blah, blah, blah. This was an eye-opener, and if I were the worst cynic of them all, because I probably am, I was within 4 months, I'm like, oh my God, how can we help? And when Florence was here for the Christmas Yule interfaith winter show, that was my question, like, how can we help people who don't have kids, people that by choice or by nature or by whatever, or their children are grown now, right? How can we come together as a society? And Florence, you had just said the most important thing is, not because it's not your problem, doesn't mean it's not a problem. It is a problem. And speaking of intersectionality, it's a problem that is across all genders, all colors, all races, all income levels, because we are a society, we're a human society. And if we don't care for the kids, then nobody is gonna, and then we're just gonna die out as a species and then bye. But until that happens, we really have to come together. I appreciate very much everything that has been said. Let's try to flip this a little bit into like a lighter note. We are seeing vaccines being distributed, hopefully more and more people. And since we're coming from the past, hopefully everybody and their cousin literally have been vaccinated by May 10. But if it's not, let's hope everybody is starting to kind of like move forward. How it is different, forget about the pandemic for a minute, if you will. How is different now that your child is a little bit older, Florence, to celebrate these pagan holidays? And I know it's still going to be pandemic tinted, but how is now cooler now that she's a little bit older?
Well, I got to say, so the best, what might have actually been the best moments of the pandemic for me were the couple times that we got together with some of our the pagan families here. We've got kind of a little pagan family group that started out as a full moon circle. We haven't been able to do that in a while, but we did in particularly at Samhain and Ostara. We got together and it was the same group of families pretty much. And we did at Samhain, we did a trick or treat in the park. We did, and where we got everybody socially distanced in a big circle, and grown-ups on the outside, kids on the inside, and had the kids rotate around and do trick-or-treat, and we filled up their baskets, and it was wonderful, and it was glorious to see, and they had a great time, and it was so meaningful for us to, as a sort of little pagan parents community, to come together. And then at Ostara, we got together and everybody dyed eggs and we came out to the exact same park. And weirdly enough, the weather was exactly the same. Like it was like the same temperature, same gusting, no leaves on the trees because we're in Wisconsin. So, you know, Ostara happens and it's still freaking winter. But we did an egg hunt and that was just so glorious, and seeing all those kids running around and it's been wonderful because it's been kind of the same cohort. You know, the oldest ones are, you know, 8, or there's one 13-year-old who we practically deputize as an adult. We're like, here, go hide the eggs. But it's just it's been so wonderful to see this little cohort of pagan kids growing up together. And as they've gotten older, it's one of the things that's actually been is that the friendships are better and they're playing more together. And sort of the older they get, the age differences matter less. So the kids who, even at Samhain, just, you know, about 6 months ago now, were just a little bit not quite being able to follow what was going on, you know, in that 6 months, they've grown so much. So by the time it got ready for the egg hunting, they were just on it. And that has been the most wonderful experience of parenting with this other group of local pagans. And I am looking forward to doing more of that as it becomes better. And also it's been great.
How about you, V? How has been, I know your children are very, very young, but the wheel keeps turning. Either the babies are babies, toddlers, or infants. And how were you able to do anything for the wheel?
Yeah, so we, not too long ago, were putting together some photo albums and we found pictures from in bulk from last year, from before everything shut down. It was our last, it's like our first big gathering in the new house with the twins. And, you know, Rowan saw it and he goes, I want to have a Brigid party again. Like, and it was really sweet because I want to have a Brigid party again too. some things I've kind of let go of. I don't pretend to celebrate like full moons right now because I'm getting as much sleep as I can. And because my kids for some reason never ever sleep through the night on a full moon anyway. Rest of the time they do okay-ish, you know, for their age, but never on a full moon. That's how I know that I've missed something as a witch. So I you know, you kind of let the side down a little bit in some ways, but in other ways we've really gotten to focus just on our schedule. So we went big for Yule this year. We made it much bigger and not like the side event to our family's Christmas parties, you know, that sort of thing. We we put up the tree, we put up the lights, we baked, and, you know, we did storytelling and made it a thing. The same thing, you know, for In Bulk this year, we rolled candles and talked about, you know, waking up the earth and that sort of stuff. So, you know, right when the pandemic hit, it was just like, oh, it's a holiday. We turned our physical wheel and moved on. But now, you know, I'm able to kind of incorporate those things a bit more into our very tiny little family circle. So in some ways it's nice to be able to just make it for my kids on that day and it works, or I can try it again the next day. I don't have to plan for a group. In other ways, I kind of wish I could, you know. We only baked like one beer loaf this year because there weren't that many of us to feed for In Bulk. And it's a little bit of both. It's a little bit of both, but my son's getting old enough now that we can kind of incorporate some science and real nature study into kind of our pagan studies as well. And I say that like it has capital letters, but it doesn't.
I have to ask you not to pry, but just out of curiosity, because I know Florence has everything very multicultural and interfaith and diverse integrated on her child's upbringing. Is your family, everybody's pagan, or do you have also like an interfaith thing going on?
It's sort of interfaith. And by that, I mean, our family, I'm kind of the lead witch. My husband's pagan friendly and goes along with whatever I ask him to do. He's very supportive. And our families are various types of Christian. So we both come from that background. I grew up celebrating a little bit of everything because of extended family, complicated stuff. And we sort of accidentally celebrate some Jewish holidays because many of our close friends are Jewish, and our town, our neighborhood is very, very Jewish. So things tend to revolve on that calendar. So it's nice to have a little bit of everything going on. Our son knows that like our friends and neighbors, they go to see Jesus at their church and some go to, you know, different places to talk to their gods. And he also will then tell you that Bridget is in the air or Bridget's in the candle. Like, we focus on Bridget just to have a solid something. So he knows that, you know, Bridget is everywhere else, basically.
Well, I guess you choose a very good one for focus name, because Bridget is amazing. And I will ask you, I asked Florence before, but I would like to hear your perspective. This is something that is also kind of like a hairy subject, where people say, you know, very young children shouldn't be taught religion, is not right, then, because we're pagans, we don't proselytize, so we let our children grow without a faith, basically. But that's the good thing, which I don't have a say because I'm not a parent. So what say you?
I say you've got to teach them something, what that looks like and how it looks, we're going to teach them anyway, whether we do it explicitly or not. I light candles to Bridget on our family altar about every day. The kids can come and say hi or not, and they're learning it either way, right? When I'm upset, I talk to Bridget, and they're learning that. And my son will take a Bridget statue and tell it secret things. He has a sense of magic. He has a sense of nature is magic. He has a sense that he is magic. And I think those things are really important. I think it's about teaching them your values, and our values are pagan. I think it's also about handing choice over, right? So as early as possible, I want to give them as much independence to be their own people as possible. And that, you know, that means teaching, you know, giving them shoes that they can put on themselves instead of needing my help. It means, you know, giving, letting them sign instead of speak sometimes when they're having big feelings. And it means giving them the choice to not be pagan, to not participate, to just want to watch while I'm blessing something or other. But I also get to teach that magic is a lot of fun. And so we throw hugs and kisses into everything that we cook together. And, you know, it's the little things. I could go on about that for a very long time.
I completely agree. And, you know, we've talked about this before, but I mean, one thing is, kids are going to ask questions that religion have answer to. I was amazed how early it came up, the subject of death and, you know, what happens and, you know, came up. And I, you know, I had a moment where I was rocking my daughter to sleep and she started asking some questions where, and I just sort of, I had this kind of choice moment where I was like, okay, I'm just going to go full pagan and I'm going to go full reincarnation. And I'm going to explain that's how I think it works. And it's been interesting. I, you know, there's other people who are much more into ancestor worship than I am. It's not been a huge thing for me. But my daughter, it is a huge thing for her. Like just the other day, she said, okay, I'm going to go in the living room and talk to my ancestors now because I'm having a problem and I want to talk to them about it. And I was just like, what? You know, like I'm you know, here dealing with the dishes, like, okay, have fun. There's going to be moments where the big questions of life, the universe and everything will come up. And I feel like you've got an option if you are a religious pagan to answer that truthfully from your truth or to prevaricate. And the one answer is better than the other in terms of, in my opinion. So, you know, like you're going to have to say something. Before the pandemic, we participated in a children's religious education program at a Unitarian meeting house near there. And it was great, but you know, there was a certain amount of, well, some people do this and some people do that, you know, and it was just like, okay, well, what do we do? Was always, you know, like, and I think in the household, we have to answer that question. What do we do? What do we believe? While simultaneously leaving the door open for them to make their own decisions. You know, especially since we're a religion where unverified personal gnosis is a huge part of it. So they're going to have their own. I have to be comfortable with the fact that she might have religious experience, like having a very close relationship with her ancestors that are not mine. But, you know, as long as I'm ready to roll with it, I'm going to teach her what I do.
Yeah. I think it's like everything, right? If they ask how this works and you don't tell them, then they're going to, I mean, at 5-year-old now, they know how to go on the internet. So you want to be the one answering any questions. B, you wanted to add something? Go ahead.
I wanted to add that one of the special tools I think that we as witches and pagans have is paradox. We get to say this is true for me, but it's not true for everyone else. This is both true and not true at the same time, and that is a fine place to be. I think that helps actually explain the differences between people. You know, we walk past the church while the bells are ringing. Those people are in there talking to God. We're going to the park to go say hi to the trees and the river, and we're talking to God too. It's both and. It doesn't have to be a hard either or. I think that is kind of part of the liberation of it, right?
Well, like the joke goes, right? You ask one question to 5 pagans, you're going to get 10 different answers. And yeah. I think that is a wonderful thing to have for children. And since we're talking about children, yes, I'm going to repeat my story, my anecdote, because I think it was so much fun. And B hasn't heard it, so I'm going to take that as an excuse to say it. My grandson, by love, comes the other day, you know, around winter solstice time with a drawing. He goes to a Catholic school, so he comes with a drawing and says, all the winter celebrations, and he has, you know, Christmas and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and something else, and Chinese New Year. And he shows me how he knows about all these different holidays. And I nonchalantly say, yeah, you're missing one. You're missing winter solstice. You know, this is when we celebrate that the sun returns and blah, blah. I give him a little, you know, 1 minute spiel about winter solstice. And you can see the wheels turning on his head. And I'm like, oh my God, what have I done? And then he turns around and tells me, I'm going to go tell my teacher she's missing something. And I'm like, no, you're not going to go tell nobody. Just, it's okay if the teacher forgot, you know. I think it's wonderful that, again, that shared task of the learning, you know, the teaching of the children. My dear friends, we are almost at the top of the hour, but I don't want to live without saying this. For people who live alive, child-free, the time of being laughing and being a cynic is over. It's time for us to unite forces. And if this situation with the children of the world don't touches your heart, don't touch your heart because you don't have kids, then go to the alternatives. It affects women. It affects women of color. It affects disenfranchised people. It affects teachers. It affects the teachers' kids. It also affects economy. And I'll tell you what, it affects your pocket. So whatever you need to put the name on to be active and to go and ask. It's not about you having kids. It's about our world trying to make it better. That's my ranting. I mean, that's my advice for child-free people. If you could give one hip hip hooray or advice to the mothers out there whom are listening right now, Florence, what would you tell those moms?
Oh gosh. Hang in there, babe. You know, we're with you. It's going to be interesting. Let's not forget this. Let's not like try and put it out of our minds. Let's come together. Let's force particularly politics to remember that we exist and not pretend that we all are able to live a life where there's the private sphere where we're mothers and the public sphere where we're not, and we have to pretend that we're two different people all the time. Let's start a revolution.
I'm on for that. Yes.
Oof, I heard of that. in a similar vein, I think that that parents, especially mothers right now, like everyone, whether they intended to or not, has become a nearly full-time hearth worker. And my favorite term is the home priestess. And that involves so much work and so much sacrifice. And it is not something that we get to walk away from. And that's hard. But I think that without fetishizing sort of any of that difficulty, there is something sacred in it. At the same time, let's not bear it silently. Let's speak out our needs. Let's call on our communities of all types to help tend us while we tend the children. And to really look forward to what we can change so that should anything put us in these positions again, we'll be a lot more empowered about all of it, right? About all of the choices, and we can all bear it a bit more together.
Thank you so much. That is the perfect ending point, or as they say, the perfect period. I would like to say, Florence, I love you with all my heart. You know that. Oops, now everybody knows it. Oh, man. I love you with all my heart. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here on the show tonight. B, it's been my pleasure and honor to meet you and to have you on the show tonight. Thank you for being here. Thank you to every person in this planet who choose the titanic labor of being a mother. This is my very tiny and very humble gift to you, to honor you, to be with you, to celebrate you. And in times to come, may you thrive. And don't forget that you are also a person, and may you bloom and blossom and be as beautiful as you are, as the life that you give. And to all the mothers out there, to all the mothers that are in the heavens, love to them. To all the mothers that are struggling and continue, my love, my respect, and always, 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 always thank you. Because I know some of us children are hard to deal with. That's it for us tonight. We're going to go into the night with a little music, but never forget that you are loved. Good night.
Ancient mother, I hear you calling. Ancient mother, I hear your song. Ancient mother, I hear your laughter. Ancient mother, I taste your tears. Ancient mother, I hear you calling. Ancient mother, I hear your song. Ancient mother, I hear your laughter. Ancient mother, I taste your tears. Ancient mother,
Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.